Hey, before we dive in, I just want to talk to you about something. You know, I recently hired an intern, which, you know, huge power trip. But I got to tell you, it was a pain in the butt to find this person. I had to talk with a couple different schools. I had to fill out a whole bunch of applications. I had to go through a ton of candidates to find someone who I thought was really great. And by the way, shout out to Kaylee Raglan, who's been absolutely crushing it for me. She's doing an unbelievable job. But, you know, it took a lot of time to find her. And what I should have done is I should have just gone to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply for your job. ZipRecruiter makes hiring efficient and effective with features like screening questions to filter candidates and an all-in-one dashboard where you can review and rate your candidates. So you got to do this. You got to go to ZipRecruiter.com. And I'm going to give you a little tip because it's going to make me look good here. Go to www.ZipRecruiter.com/Zach. That's my name, Z-A-K. Make sure you spell it correctly. And check it out. If you need to hire someone, if you're looking to bring someone on board, don't waste time doing the usual recruiting nonsense. Go to ZipRecruiter.com and get the job done there. Okay, I'm done talking. I've talked way too long. Let's go. Here we go. Let's dive in.
The Zach Kuhn Show.
Episode 47, Alex Hall on the podcast. What can I say about Alex? He's got a new EP coming out called Six Strings. This is a very cool project featuring some of the biggest acts in country music like Brad Paisley, Vince Gill, John Osborne, Brad Tursi of Old Dominion. This is an amazing project. Parts of it are actually already out now, so you can go listen to it on streaming services or wherever you listen to music. Alex is, I mean, he's a musician's musician, you know what I mean? He's a guitar player, big guitar guy, and I think that comes across in this project. There's, you know, great playing all over it. I think that's kind of the essence of it. I mean, for God's sakes, the thing is called Six Strings. Come on. Okay, let's dive in. We talk about it all. Here we go. Episode 47, Alex Hall. Let's dive in.
All right, wait. So are you in Nashville? Where are you?
I'm in Nashville. We live on the, my wife and I live on the west side of town, and I'm here, 2021, rocking and rolling.
By the way, you just got married, right?
I did, November 1st. Yeah, we're 2 months in.
How's it going?
Married life is great. It's been, I mean, honestly, I don't feel like it's a big difference from engaged life or even just being dating. We were together for about 3.5 years before we got married. And life is great. We're enjoying it, and we've got two little dogs and doing our thing.
I saw this, I was peeping on your Instagram because I saw that you said it was like really, you had a date for the wedding and it was really important for you guys to keep that date. So did you guys have like an intimate ceremony that was just you guys? Is that what happened? What happened with this?
Yeah. Wedding? So basically we had planned a wedding to be set for November 1st here in Nashville. Bree, my wife, is from here in Nashville, and her parents got married at this old beautiful mansion over on the east side of town called Riverwood, and we had booked it, planned to be married there, everything, and then pandemic happens, obviously, and still we're planning to do it, but then it got downsized to like 25 people, but the price didn't change and all of this crazy stuff. And so we were like, all right, this is not going to work. So we left that plan, planned another wedding. That plan didn't work. Planned a third wedding. That plan didn't work. And so we were about a month and a week out from the wedding date. And we were very hell bent on like, this is our date, November 1st, no matter what, this is the date we want to be married. And so we finally were just like, screw it. We're going to elope. And so we both love California, and it was pretty shut down still, but we found this beautiful Airbnb out in LA, overlooking all the city up in Los Feliz, and it was absolutely beautiful. And just the two of us and our photographer went out there, and we got married. We spent about four or five days out in LA, and ate some great food, did what we could do around. Again, everything was pretty strict, but we were safe and did everything that we could do. We went on hikes and stuff like that, and got married, and here we are, three weddings later.
The photos look great, man. The photos, you wouldn't have known it was a socially distant wedding. The photos look great. Let me ask you this.
Well, thank you.
In normal times, was Shane McAnally going to get invited to the wedding?
He was, yeah. He was on the list.
He was on the list.
I don't know. I'm sure he would have came, yeah. He was on the list. I would say we had a pretty cool wedding list. I don't know. I think so. It was just our friends and very, very close work people and our family, and that was it. So either way, our wedding was, I think, 125 people originally. So it wasn't going to be a massive wedding, but, you know, it went from 125 to 3 people. So it is what it is.
It's weird. I miss my invite. I don't know where that was. It's fine.
Everyone did. We never actually even sent them out.
Never even. Okay, great. Now I feel better. Dude, you've lived my like my high school fantasy dream of playing on a record with Brad Paisley. Brad Paisley's my favorite guitar player. I mean, he is my absolute hero. He's the chicken picking best. Are you a big Brad Paisley fan how'd you get him on the record? Who gets him on the record?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I'm still dumbfounded by it because, again, I grew up listening to pretty much nothing but country radio and then old school country and Southern rock. And that was basically the roots of my growing up listening to music. And so at that time, you know, I'm 26 years old. I was born in 1994. And at that time, right around where I was really understanding music and, you know, 5-6 years old in the truck wanting to listen to the radio, Brad Paisley was kind of everywhere on the radio in the early 2000s and stuff. He was popping off. So, I mean, I grew up listening to him and covering a few of his songs back in the day when I was started playing in cover gigs and stuff when I was 15, 16 years old. And so having him be a part of this project is just, again, it kind of blows my mind that he said yes to being a part of it. And I think originally, I could be wrong, but I think Katie McCartney from my label Monument Records reached out to Brad personally, I believe, and he loved the song and said yes to playing, and he's singing the harmonies on it as well. And him and I doing some dueling guitaring back and forth on it. And it's one of my favorites on the whole record because it's everything that I love about a traditional country song meeting a contemporary country genre, which I feel like is something that he has done very well throughout his career. And I'm hoping that, you know, as a young artist, I can channel what he's done and what my other influences have done and kind of carry that torch on through, you know, in today's world.
Absolutely. He's made the classics very cool again. And he's brought so
many, absolutely,
people like Lil Jimmy Dickens, or he's brought so many legends kind of back into the spotlight. But how does this work? Because there's a line on this record even where you and him kind of like harmonize guitar lines, but you guys weren't in the studio together recording it, right? So do you send him like a track with an outline, and do you kind of come up with that harmony line, or did he just lay the single line and one of you harmonized it, or how does that come together?
So this record was kind of challenging because, again, we recorded it during a pandemic. And so a few of the people were able to come into the studio with us and record their parts and stuff, but the other half of them could not. And Brad recorded it at his studio, I believe, at his house or wherever he was. And I had already recorded the drums, all of my guitars, my vocals, everything on my end was done. And so the first guitar solo and the actual guitar solo section it's me playing that solo, and then Brad's over on the harmony, and then the outro solo, Brad kind of takes front half, and then we kind of start going all over each other at the end of it. But I had already done all of my stuff, and that was kind of the process for the whole thing. I did all of my parts, sang everything. I haven't actually already sang the harmonies and everything for Brad and stuff as well. And then he came in, and we weren't planning on even doing 3-part harmony on the song, and he sang 3-part harmony, and it sounds so great, especially on the third chorus when everything kind of sucks out and it comes back in, and this, it's just really cool. So long story short, I had already recorded all of my parts, sent them, John Osborne recorded his at his studio, Brad recorded his at his, and Vince recorded it separately, but then Tennille Towns, Cassie Ashton, and Brad Tersey all came to the studio where we recorded and cut their stuff there.
Tennille Towns is a great guitar player, by the way, right?
Fantastic, yeah. I feel like if you're a Tennille Towns fan, you probably know that. If you're not, and you know who she is, but you don't really, you know, follow her or whatever, you might not. And man, she, so that song is a song that we wrote together. I think, gosh, it's probably been a year and a half ago we wrote it. Heart Shut. Yep. And it was the first song we ever wrote together. We were fans of each other prior and then decided to write. And so we got together, wrote that song. It was an idea that me and my producers had. And I knew that I wanted to write it as a duet with her and everything. And so on the record, we just kind of took what the demo was and we re-recorded everything, but it's very similar. But she wasn't playing on the demo. She is playing on the record. And she came in and I think we're both in from first chorus playing, and she did two takes top to bottom on her guitar, and that was it. It was perfect. And she crushed it. And she always tunes her guitar. I think it's the open C, I want to say. So all the strings are kind of open. It's open tuning. I want to say it's C. It could be D, but I think it's open C.
It's like a
really low.
Full step lower than a standard tuning.
Yep. So standard tuning is in E. So actually, it might be, I think it's probably open D. I think C would probably be too low for the acoustic. I think it's probably open D. But yeah, so her guitar is in open tuning, and so that's why it has that really bright, strummy, jangly sound, which is really cool because my guitar is not open tuning, and it's kind of darker, deeper sound. I like Gibson acoustic guitars, and she's playing a really old Martin, and so it's brighter than mine. So they balance so well in the mix, and on the whole track, I'm panned to the left side on my guitars the whole time, and the feature's panned to the right the whole time. So if you have headphones, then you can really differentiate who's playing what. And so our guitars balanced together sounded so cool. And she's such a pro. And like I said, two takes down and she crushed it. So it's awesome.
I'm going to listen to this now and I'll be listening to the two sides. Do you have a lot of guitars though? Are you a big collector? Or how many guitars would you
have? I would say if I was financially able, I would be way more of a collector than I am, which one day it'll happen. I think I have 10 guitars. So I have enough, but yeah, it's funny. It's changed. I'm a huge gear fan to answer your question. I produce all my stuff with my other two co-producers, write all the stuff, play on all the records. And I just kind of nerd out about it. I don't have any other hobbies besides music and my dogs and being married. I would say, here's my thing. If I pick up a guitar, no matter if it's a shitty guitar, a great guitar, old, new, it doesn't matter to me. I like the way that it plays and sounds, and that's all that cares. Like the guitar that I played on the majority of this record was a $400 used Mexican Telecaster I bought at Guitar Center last year. And I played pretty much the whole record on it. And I didn't change anything. It's got still got the Mexican bridge. It's got the Mexican tuners, all of the really cheap parts from the cheaper version of the guitars. And I like the way it played and sounded. So I don't get into the whole like, well, this pickup or this bridge or this saddle, or I think if it sounds good and plays good, don't mess with it. Just let it do what it does. And if you're, it's all in the hands.
Take notes, kids. This is Alex Hall.
Don't take notes. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's what's worked for me so far.
I think I don't own that many guitars. I've got about three guitars. I've been playing the same Tele since I was in probably 10th grade when I bought it. Done everything with that now. I probably haven't done things as accurately as I could if I had a Strat or anything, but you make it work. You play, you make it work. If it's a good solid guitar, it's all you need.
That's my philosophy.
I'm with it. Wait, so tell me about this. So you had your first guitar lesson when you were 5 years old, and your guitar teacher said you couldn't read, but what was this guy talking about? Of course you can't read. Because you're like, what happened here? What's the story?
So basically, long story short, my parents bought me. I still have the guitar. I have it high strung, and I use it in the studio and stuff. Actually, still, they bought me this, like, I think it was probably $150 Takamine. I think it's a G240 or something. Crappy little guitar at the only music store that sold guitars in my hometown, and we went in, they bought me the guitar, and it was a full-size guitar, and I'm 5 years old. And I don't come from a musical family at all. So it's, you know, very little knowledge at this point of music, besides being a fan. And so they buy me the guitar, go back to the music store, and it was this younger guy that wasn't the owner or anything. And I actually know the owner very well now, and he gave me some lessons later on for some stuff and another story. But go in. He sits me down and he brings out a sheet of music. And again, I don't know how to read. I think I genuinely just started kindergarten. And he's like, brings me right back out of the lesson. I don't think I was in there for 30 minutes. And my parents were still there. They waited on me. I came out and they're like, hey, so I'm really sorry, but I don't think that I can teach your son how to play guitar. Like, he doesn't know how to read. And they were like, well, what, I mean, you guys just sold us this guitar. And, you know, now what am I supposed to do? So I literally put it back in the case, put it in the closet. And I tried again when I was like 10, I think. I still didn't like it and get into it. I was just much more into football or I grew up riding horses and stuff too. So I was really into that. And it didn't quite connect with me. And so I didn't touch the guitar really again until I think I was 14. And I took lessons for about 9 months and then that was it.
This guy kind of sucks though. I mean, of course you're not, shouldn't have his job have been to teach you how to read?
Isn't at least to read the music. Old? Yeah.
He should have been the one to teach you how to read. That's what,
yeah. I mean, he didn't need to bring out Dr. Seuss or anything, but he could have at least showed me how to read the music notes. But, yeah, but I'm sure the guy, I hope, is not teaching guitar anymore. I hope wherever you are, guy that probably doesn't even remember me, I hope you're not teaching guitar.
Look at Alex now. He's on top of the world. So you pick up the guitar again, and then you start learning like James Burden licks. I've like, were you learning Elvis records?
No. So yes and no. I didn't want to be a guitar player ever. I never wanted to be a guitar player. I wanted to be a singer. I loved to sing. I was obsessed with Elvis. He is my first recollection of music. I have no idea how. My parents weren't fans. My grandparents weren't really fans. But I always just say Elvis found me, and I'm not kidding. I don't know how I found Elvis. But I did, and I just fell in love. I was obsessed, and I would dress up as him and put on shows for my family when they would come over or visit from out of town. And I memorized every word from Live at Madison Square Garden and the moves and everything. And so when I started learning to play guitar, I think it was like a gold Elvis 30 number one hits or something CD. And I just learned how to play the chords because I didn't want to play guitar. I even told my guitar instructor when I started back to lessons at 14, like I skipped, and I hate that I did it now, but I skipped the whole like scales and the whole rudimentary basics of guitar. And I was just like, teach me how to play chords because I want to write songs and I want to sing and play shows. That's all that I care about. And so that's what I did. And so I was learning how to play the chords and the rhythm parts to those songs. And basically it was that and George Strait's Troubadour, I think, was around that time. And that was the first song that I ever learned how to like actually cover and sing was Troubadour by George Strait. But yeah, I pretty much learned that Elvis record front to back because, again, all I wanted to do was grow up to be Elvis Presley. So
to be Elvis. Wait, but then how did you start playing? Because when you were in high school, you were doing, what, like 150 shows a year?
Yeah.
Right? How do you – that's – I mean, that's a lot for like a pro – for a pro
even. Yeah. So it was crazy. I was 15 when I played my first show, and early on it was like anywhere they would let me play. It was a restaurant or a bar or a town parade or literally anywhere that would let me play, I would play. And so it got to the point by probably my sophomore year where I was playing, like I had like a set Monday through Wednesday acoustic gig that I would do somewhere around the North Georgia area. And then Thursday through Saturday, I would be playing at some bar anywhere in the Southeast. And then Sunday, I would be back in leading worship at church or singing in the choir at church or something at church. And then rinse, rather repeat 7 days a week. And so by the time I was a junior, I had gotten a booking agent up in Nashville at Paradigm that then moved to WME at the time.
How'd you do that? That's kind of hard. And also like booking agents, if they don't see any direct money in you, it's very hard to get them to work for you. Like if you're not making the money.
Yes and no.
No?
Yes and no. I think it just depends on the agent. I think it depends on the client. At least from my experience, I can't speak for everybody. But I had a guy that really, really believed in me at the time. He's no longer my agent. It's been a long time since we worked together, but, I had a vocal coach in Atlanta she worked with like the band Perry and Usher and Justin Bieber and all these people. So she had some connections. And then I was playing at this place called Wild Bill's down in Atlanta. And it was this huge, like 4,000 capacity club that everybody came through and played. And so I had like written down that for years, like I had to play Wild Bill's. That's all that I wanted to do, especially being from North Georgia. It's like you had to play Wild Bill's. And I finally got in at Wild Bill's to open up. They were like, we got a Wednesday night slot. blah, 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 blah. There was nobody there.
You were like around, you were doing the rounds, playing locally. They just knew, like, were you hustling together?
Well, my dad was helping me book stuff and kind of managing me at the time and everything. And we would just bug the shit out of people until they would let me play. Like, I mean, it would be like, hey, let me play. Like, I'm just like, I want to do this. And honestly, at that time in North Georgia, there was a few country people, but it was really just a lot of rock and roll cover bands. That was basically it. So I was this weird 15, 16 year old kid trying to play country songs. And we just kept calling people until they finally would say yes. And so I built up enough buzz around there to get to Wild Bill's, which is my spot. And so I went down and it was like a Wednesday night, which is like their audition night. And there was nobody there. And I went on and I was like, I don't give a shit. Like, I'm just going to put on my best show that I can. And I did. And they, after that, I mean, I was playing there probably three times a month, opening up for like Frankie Ballard and Gary Allen and all these amazing people that came through there. And so they got kind of the ear of some of the other agents and stuff up in Nashville. And so it was this weird round circle thing that happened. And so that's how that happened. And so they started booking me some other club and bar and opening gigs after that. And I mean, I was pretty much exhausting myself, but also I was having the time of my life because I was barely making it through high school, but I was crushing it playing shows. And that's, I didn't even want to go to high school. I didn't care about it. I didn't go to college. Like, I just was like, music was it. And
I thought when I picked up the guitar, I thought that all the women were going to love me for being a guitar player. And I quickly learned that that's kind of a myth. That's not really true. At least early on.
Yeah, I don't, to be honest, I never got into it to be like, oh, like I got to get the girls. Like I genuinely didn't care. I was like, I just connected with it as an outlet for me, I feel like. And it was the only thing for me that actually like stuck. I quit football. I wasn't good enough at sports. I'm very clumsy. I am so clumsy. I fall all the time for no reason, drop stuff. So sports was not going to work for me. And I knew I wasn't going to make a living rodeoing. And so when I finally connected with the guitar, it was just like that. So, but to answer your question, so then the girls come, you're 15. It's like, who doesn't want
Are you girls popular? To like you? You're playing 150 shows a year. You're living the rock star life. You've got a talent agent. You're like playing Buffalo Bills. Like, are you popular? You're like the cool guitar player guy, or like,
no,
not even noticing you.
No, not in high school, at least. My band was all in their early 20s. And I never participated in high school because I was never there. Like, I never went to the football games or anything like that because I was playing shows. And everywhere that I was playing, for the most part, was 18 and up. And so I was not necessarily the cool kid in school because I was not very interactive with the kids that I went to school with. All of my friends were older than me. I couldn't wait to get out of my school or my town and everything. And I just wanted to leave. And now looking back, of course, again, I've gotten older and lived in Nashville a while now. And now I just miss my hometown and I love my hometown so much. But at the time, because it was kind of the opposite, where I wasn't so cool around school because of that. So I felt like this weird teenage person that was lost in this adult world. But then my career wise was great. So I just kind of didn't care. I don't know.
That's the place to be. Is it like Brad Paisley talks about how when he was younger, his band was all these older guys who really now play like that. Like the band I was in was like shitty high schoolers also. Like if you can get in with some older people and who really know how to play their instrument, that's like the best master class right there, right?
Well, I think it just depends. It depends on what you're doing. I think for me it was great. I played with some, don't get me wrong, that I was shitty. Half the time my band was shitty, especially early on. None of us knew what we were doing. It was just whoever you could find in Gainesville, Georgia. There was not a whole lot of young, eager musicians trying to make it. And so, you know, it was just like whoever you could find. And then, you know, the more I played and the bigger the shows got, the easier it was to find better musicians. But that to be said, you hear all these incredible, you know, high school bands that got together and they become the biggest bands in the world. So I think it just depends on the scenario.
Out of Georgia?
I mean, probably a couple. I don't know. I haven't done my research on it, but I'm sure there was a few.
You've got like REM, although I don't know if they were high schoolers. REM.
I don't know.
Are they from
REM, the Allman Brothers? REM, I think they were from Athens. But again, I don't know if they were from like started in high school, but I mean Dwayne
Zach Brown.
Zach Brown was in Georgia, Travis Tritt. I mean, we got quite a bit. Jason Aldean, Luke Bryan.
Luke Bryan.
Yeah. Billy Currington, Alan Jackson.
I think Ray Charles is from Georgia.
Ray Charles is from it's like I don't know exactly because I've heard Florida and Georgia. Somewhere around the line, I think. I think he was from Macon, but then I don't know.
And Sam Hunt. Isn't Sam Hunt from Georgia?
Sam Hunt. He's from Cedartown, I believe, or around Cedartown.
Is there a Georgia nod or a Georgia handshake? Do you guys ever get together? And is there a secret
society? I don't know. I get excited when I meet people from Georgia because I'm from Georgia and I'm a big Georgia fan. And so I get excited, but I don't know if there's like an actual handshake. I'm sure there's something I'll learn one day. I know everyone kicked me out.
They might.
I don't have any tailgate songs, so I probably got kicked out of the club.
They might be doing this behind your back. You got.
They are. I'm gonna have to make some phone calls.
So is it true that when you sat down at Monument Records for the first time, does Shane sign you right on the spot? Is that true?
Yeah, it's true.
Was that the first time you met him?
It was. I was nervous as hell because he's my songwriting hero, you know, and production here. I mean, gosh, he produced some of my favorite records in town. So I produce and co-write a lot of my music with these two guys named AJ Babcock and Pete Good. And they work on another artist with Shane as well that signed a Monument. And Pete had sent AJ a song that we wrote that's on this project, actually called Other End of the Phone. And we wrote the song 2 years ago now. And sent to Shane. Legend goes, I don't know if it's a true story or not, but legend goes, Shane hears a song, doesn't make it past the first chorus, calls Pete. He's like, who is this guy? Like, I've got to meet him. Does he have a record deal? Blah, 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 all of this stuff. And so it was like, you know, over those few weeks, there's like music sending around and some conversations, but nothing like in stone or anything. And so then like, it was like the ACMs, I think, were happening in like early March or late March, or early April, whenever they are. And they were like, hey, as soon as we got from the ACMs, like, we want you to come into Monument and come meet with us. And I've done the label meetings. I've done everything.
How long have you been in Nashville at this point?
I've lived here. March will be 7 years.
But when you went into that meeting, how long was that?
Right. It was like literally like a week away from 6 years to the day. I've been coming to town working since 2009. So it had been like almost 10 years to the day of me coming to town for the first time. So it was like six. It was weird timing. And
are you kind of like frustrated? Like, why isn't it happening for me? I mean, you're still really young, but like, you've got to be having those thoughts, right? Like,
For sure. I mean, again, I started playing shows when I was 15. So since 2009, I've been busting my ass playing cover gigs or opening up for people or both in the same night. Or like, I mean, sometimes I would literally play two shows in one day, like, and I would drop 2 hours, whatever. So I had put my work in. I'd done my showcases up here like over and over. Sometimes they'd be packed. Sometimes there would literally be nobody but my publisher.
These showcases, like sometimes these showcases, you play your heart out. It's like the industry crowd just sucks because the industry crowd doesn't know how to party. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, they're just kind of a drag, right? Or am I wrong? I've never played an industry showcase.
To be honest, I would say they're 100% a bit of a drag, but at the same part, they're a part of how this town works and how it's worked for decades. And I think it sucks that that's how it happens, but it happens that way for a reason, I'm sure. And you know, everyone has done it. I was literally listening to the Dax Shepard podcast, Armchair Expert. With Keith Urban the other day, and he's talking about his story. And I was like, God, it's a great podcast. And Keith talking about, and I heard him tell this story a couple of years ago at Exit Inn. He was playing a show and he told the same story. And it's like, I can't tell you how many times I was like, all right, this is the night. Like, I know these labels, these people are, or even just for a publishing deal or whatever it was, they're going to be there. And then someone else ends up playing a show or something comes up or traffic was horrible and they were there 20 minutes late or whatever it is. And it's just like nothing ever quite lined up right. And so when I went to this Monument meeting, it finally was happening. And I was like, all right, this is going to be it. Like, I don't know. But also part of me was like a little jaded at this point too, where I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I was also shopping for publishing deals and that was kind of going slow. And I just was like, not really sure what was going to be going on, honestly. And I go in, we meet, it's me, my manager, Autumn House, Katie McCartney from the label, Jason Owen from the label, and Shane McAnally. And I didn't know Katie, and I didn't know any of them, but I had known who Jason Owen and Shane were, of course. And so we're in there, and I'm nervous as hell because, again, I look up to these people, and Katie is just like the most demanding of attention in the room of anyone I've ever met, which I love so much, and I love people like that. And so Katie's just this badass, and everyone's just, it's just a great meeting. And then all of a sudden, Shane's just like, all right, well, I want you to play me a song on the guitar. And I was like, all right, I can do that. So I get my acoustic out, and he's like, I want you to play Other End of the Phone, which was the song that he had heard. And so I played it, and as soon as I finished, he stood up, and he's like, I want to sign you to Monument Records. And I literally just lose it. I start crying. He starts crying. My manager's crying. And because like all of us know the struggle. Everyone in this town knows the struggle of how hard it is to just get there, not even make it, but just get to the point where you can start making it. And I think everyone knows that struggle. And so I think we all felt it in that room so much that day. And I remember it just like it was yesterday. And I clearly said yes. So,
okay. So a couple things. So first of all, do you think Shane says to everyone, I think we're going to sign this kid before you come to the room? Because Jason Owens, his partner, like, does he run it by you? Do you think they had a conversation beforehand, or do you think he just made the executive decision right there that we're
I honestly have no idea. I don't know. My personal opinion would be they probably would have had a conversation prior that was like, hey, if this goes well, we're going to offer him a deal. I would assume. But also knowing Shane, I can also see Shane just being like, nope, that's it. We're doing it. I don't care. I believe in it. We're going forward. So I don't know. I would like to think that they were just like, if this goes well, we'll offer him a deal. But I don't know. I've actually never asked.
What a great story though. And then you kind of do go away and do you kind of like sleep on it for a minute, or like, what's the, like, did they put contract in front, you signed right there? Like what's
next step?
What's the process afterwards?
That's the non-glamorous part that no one ever sees, I guess, about
how long does it take to get all that like sorted out?
I think I was offered the deal. I want to say it was sometime right around mid-March or mid-April. And I think that I actually signed it in like end of June, early July. And then I don't think it even announced until like August that year. It was actually August 31st because it was my first release was the same day. So, I mean, so it's not a long time. But in that time period where you're like, you can't really tell anybody and you just want to scream it from the rooftops, it sucks. And that feels like it was a decade in itself of just waiting a couple of months of like, oh, I just want to wait. I want to get the deal done. But then it's like attorneys and all of the stuff. But
who do you tell though? Like your best friends know, or like you call it like when you get a Monument, do you like call your parents, or who do you call when you get out of that meeting?
The first thing that happened, we leave the meeting, my manager and I literally went and sat in my truck and just lost it. I mean, we were just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, calm down. And then the first person I called was my wife. Then she was at the time my girlfriend. And then I actually asked her to marry me that I think it was like the next week.
You were feeling
I know I was already planning it. I had no idea. Right. I already had the ring and everything, and I didn't know I was going to be getting a record deal. And so I called my girlfriend then at the time, and then I called my parents after that. So that was kind of, but I mean, I told my like crew of, you know, people I was writing with and my publishers that I was signing a new publishing deal with and all of that, but I couldn't just like, you know, post it on Instagram or text some random people.
When you sign your deal and then it gets announced, everybody knows Alex Hall is a Monument. And now there's like a real thing where it's like all of a sudden Alex Hall has got access to, you know, he could have a song on the radio. He's got amazing resources now. There's a whole thing. Do you think certain people start treating you differently? Like you're out of Red Door. Do certain writers come up and talk to you and you're like, you never spoke to me before the deal, and now all of a sudden I'm your best friend? Like how does that
I think there's a piece of it. I didn't experience anything like where I was like, oh, screw you. Like I'm not going to do that. I didn't experience anything like where random people I'd never talked to before were, you know, just being that way. But I remember specifically, I went to Fenwick's for breakfast with somebody.
Great breakfast. Like, wait, what do you get at Fenwick's? Because that's my favorite spot in town.
Well, yeah. I'm an old man, and everywhere that I go that's a breakfast place, I normally get whatever, like, the traditional or whatever is, with just, like, bacon, eggs, toast, and if it's got that's the classic, yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm a very much a traditional person.
They nail it, because first of all, the bacon is fantastic. It's Benton's
perfect.
Bacon. The strawberry, I get the strawberry jam, which is incredible.
Yep.
The toast
me
is
me too.
They nail the basic. The
Fenwick's. Them and Frothy Monkey, I think, do a great job in Nashville of nailing the traditional classic breakfast.
Frothy Monkey. Okay, so yeah. You're in Fenwick's.
So I go to Fenwick's.
Yeah.
So I guess this was the only time that I really experienced it where I was like, oh, that was really weird. And I don't know that I think it was like, it was either a week after it had announced or like it had just been offered to me. I think it wasn't even announced. I think it had just been offered to me. We were in negotiations and stuff. And I go into Fenwick's, and somehow, I guess, again, small town Nashville, everyone somehow had heard I was offered a deal or I'd signed a monument or whatever it was. And I'm not kidding. Like, I kind of got a little swarmed at the door by industry people of like, congrats, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't any gurminess or anything. It was just like a lot of congratulations. Because again, I've worked with so many people and I've written with so many people and met with all of the publishers, because I've had a publishing deal in town since 2015. So, you know, I've known a lot of these people a long time. And so I think people were just excited and everything. And that was the one moment I feel like where I was like, oh, that was kind of weird. But also I want some more of that. That was kind of awesome. And that was probably the one moment though, where it was like, I got a little bit of like a swarm of industry people, but it wasn't in like a weird way of like, hey, we haven't written in a long time. Let's, you know, let's write again or whatever.
That's cool though. That's the ultimate like morning industry hang, Fenwick's. You walk into Fenwick's.
Most definitely.
And everybody, you know, you got Ken Levithan and like Beth Laird is having lunch and like everyone is sitting there in the morning. It's so good. I love it.
It's one of my favorites. I love it.
So how do you put out Half Past You? Who do you write the song with Shane, right? Was this
So that song was interesting because we had written a bunch of songs. I mean, I've been writing songs for this record for years, but after we got, you know, the offer, the deal and everything, it was like, all right, well, because they wanted me to go into the studio, I think it was first week of July. So it was very quickly wanting me to go ahead and record music. And so we just were writing our asses off just for the songs and the singles and everything. And we wrote Half Past You. I think it was not long after I got offered the deal, but it was after I got offered the deal. It was just me, Pete Good, and AJ Babcock. The three of us wrote it, finished it, everything, turned it in, sent it off, everything. Everyone was so excited about it. And then we sent it to Shane, and Shane was like, man, I'm telling you guys, I think this can be a hit song, but I just don't think it's done yet. I don't think it's quite, he songland this, to be honest. And
songland was even a thing.
Before it was even out yet. And so Shane was like, look, you guys do whatever you want with it, but I would love to come in and help if I can. So I was like, absolutely. I've never written with him before. And I was anything that I can do, I'm in. And so he came into the studio and we rewrote every line of every verse. We didn't change the melodies. The chorus stayed the exact same, but we rewrote every line of every verse and it just changed the song exponentially. And so the rest is history. Yeah. We just chose that as the first song because it just felt right. It feels good. The song's, I think, a great showcase of what was to come after that. And that was my first single and my first write with Shane McAnally.
How insane is that? That's unbelievable. And now we've got Six Strings, the new EP, which we're releasing in sections, little single releases. There are six songs on this EP, right?
Yeah.
There's two out right now with Vince Gill and Josh Osborne. And is there another one out or it's just those two, right?
So far we did Jealous Love first with Josh Osborne from Brothers Osborne. John. Josh is the songwriter. John's the songwriter.
Yes, right. It's very confusing.
Very confusing. Yeah. J-O. But John Osborne from Brothers Osborne, he played and sang on that when that was first released. Or he didn't sing, sorry, just played. And then second release was Vince Gill, which he played and sang on. And then this Friday, I don't know when this will air, so I'm just going to say January 8th because that's when it's going to come out. Brad, and so January 8th, Brad Paisley will be coming out. Yeah, with Last One to Leave. And then the rest of the whole project will come as a whole in February.
This is a great project. You've got some amazing people on here, and the songs, there's a Cassie Ashton song. There's a Tino Town song. Who else is on this?
Brad Tursey from Old Dominion. Yeah.
This is an all-star. This is an all-star project. Let me ask you this. On the Brad Paisley song, there's a massive slide at one point. Is it into the guitar solo? I'm trying to think. There's two.
It's my guitar. Yeah, there's two.
Matt, do you do that?
Yeah. So the first, it's actually literally my take. I'm posting the video of the solo tomorrow on my Instagram. And
I love that.
Yeah, it's a good way to get it. So everything kind of chokes out and stops, and I slide into the guitar solo, and it literally, because it's in drop D, and so I slide down the neck and then pull back up on the A string up to the note, and that's what starts the solo. And then Brad actually copied it, not copied me, but just he does it again, going back into the third chords, because there's another choke where it kind of comes back in on the offbeat. And so he's doing the second slide. I'm doing the first slide.
So the first one is you, the second one is Brad. Any other little Easter eggs we should be on the lookout for, or any other like little moments on this record that really blow your mind?
I mean, again, I think if I could just encourage anyone to listen in headphones or speakers. Again, I listen to music in every way too, on Bluetooth, whatever. But I think when you're listening to a record, it should be listened to with headphones, because I'm a music nerd. But listen for the left and right panning, because I'm on the left, all the features are on the right. And that way you can really hear who's playing what and what parts. Cause the whole thing of this is like, I wanted to showcase my guitar playing, but I also wanted to showcase my friends and my heroes guitar playing and what they sound like as an artist, as a guitar player. And so to me, that was really important to make sure you could hear the difference. And I think you can tell anyways, cause I have my own guitar tone. They have their own guitar tone, but I'm on the left, they're on the right. And just put your headphones in and listen and you'll hear it.
That is cool. I love that. How cool is that? Everyone does really have their own unique tone though, especially I think Brad. The second Brad comes in that song, you know it's Brad. Same with Vince Gill. I mean, the best of the best, they all have something completely unique, right? It's like,
I mean, even Brad Tursey down to like, he just has this really cool slinky style of guitar playing. And he mostly is a Strat guy. And he plays Strat on the record. And he has his thing, and you know, I just think it's cool, and that was something I wanted to showcase. And even again, down to Tennille with her open string tuning on the acoustic and the way that she plays and everything. And Cassie's actually the only one that's not playing on the record, but I've said in everything that I've talked about, and I truly believe this because Cassie's one of my best friends, and we've known each other a long time. And she's such an incredible vocalist, and she uses her vocals as an instrument more than anyone that I know, and I do mean that. We wrote this song together, and you'll hear the song, and it's super personal, and it's personal to her as well. And so I couldn't think of anybody else to play on it that would do it justice. And so I made an excuse for her to be a part of it.
She's the exception, but it's a great song, man. This is a great project. Alex Hall, we've said so much. I mean, what have we left out? What's been unsaid?
I don't know. I think we covered a lot of it. I think we covered a lot about it. I didn't know you were a guitar player, so that's good to know.
I've been playing guitar since I was a little kid. That's why I studied in college. I studied guitar in college, and you didn't go to college, and you're way better. That's the difference.
Well, to each their own.
Teach their own. What are you doing later today? What you got going on? Do you play every day?
Do what now?
Do you play guitar every day?
Every day, yeah, for the most part. Even when I go home to my parents or whatever, I always bring a guitar with me. Pretty much always.
And I'm not even a professional guitar player.
I mean,
I bring my guitar.
I think for me, it's therapeutic. It's like, it's therapeutic for me to play. And I think that's probably for anyone that plays, no matter whether it's a hobby, professional, college, whatever it is. And so I play every day. Yeah. And but for the rest of the day, I'm going to go work out, get my car washed, truck washed, and probably play. I'm playing a little thing next. We're recording a thing next week. So I got to practice those and just getting a little bit of work done. That's it, man.
What's your workout routine? What do you do? Do you work out in the house? Do you have like a little workout set up?
I absolutely hate working out. If I didn't have to, I would never do it. Yeah. But I work out at a place in town called Hot Works, and it's like a infrared sauna where you can work out in there. And then I also have a gym here where I do like, it's like a Peloton bike and a treadmill and weights. That's pretty, I don't do anything crazy. I absolutely hate exercising. but
just the bare
minimum. I also love fried chicken and cheeseburgers and stuff. So that's, you know, one Keith, hand, you gotta, it's all about balance.
I think I heard Keith Urban say, he's like, I just do the bare minimum to like do what I need to do on stage. He's like, that's my workout. Yep. Whatever allows me to do.
Man, and that guy runs everywhere too. He's like, so he's got to do some massive cardio or something. Cause he is booking it around those arenas.
He does. I love what he says in the Armchair Expert podcast when he's like, there was one guy, maybe it might have been from Sony, but there was one guy who would come to every one of his shows.
Yeah.
He was like, are you going to sign me? And he's like, no. He's like, what should I do differently? And he's like, don't change. Don't do anything. He's like, I can't sign you, but he's like, don't do anything different.
I know. That was, I mean, this side note, but another fun Keith Urban story. My wife used to work at his management company, and I think it was like a year and a half, 2 years ago. He was doing a tour announcement at Exit Inn and did like a live show.
Yeah.
And so we got to go and check it out and everything. And it was at Exit Inn and we're standing there and he's like, man, I remember about, I think he was like 25 years ago, however long it had been. He was like, I'd played all of these showcases over and over and over and over again. And I had this showcase here at Exit Inn. There was nobody here. And I got my stuff set up. The band was ready to go. And I go up to start to play and my amp shit out on me. He was like, my amp just wouldn't work. And so we're like messing with it, trying to get stuff going. And he's like, I didn't have a guitar tech, of course. And we were running late. And he's like, and the guy from Capitol Records, I think it was Capitol Records, was supposed to be there. And nobody had came yet, thankfully. And he was like, so we finally get the amp going. And he's like, we're like 30, 45 minutes late. And then all of a sudden this long white limousine pulls up outside of Exit Inn. And it was the guy from Capitol Records, the head of the label at the time, whoever it was. And he walks in, he stands dead center of the stage. He's like mid-song, we're in the song. He hears it, turns right back around, walks right back out the door, and he leaves. And I didn't get signed. He's like, but years later, of course, I got signed to the label. And, you know, it's jokes on him. But I thought that was a great Keith Urban story.
That's a great Keith Urban story. I love it. Alex Hall, he's got a new project out, Six Strings. It's being released in sections, but then it's going to come at you all at once. Brad Paisley song out January 8th. Alex Hall.
Yeah.
Check him out everywhere. Social.
Thanks for having me, Zach. I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Stay well out there, buddy. I want to see you show. Well. When shows are back and safe to do so, I got to come out and see you play.
It'll hopefully sooner than later. Hopefully sooner than later.
Hopefully sooner than later. Stay well out there, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
You as well. Take care, man. See ya.
There you have it. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks again to Alex for taking the time to come on to the show. Hopefully we'll find some time to break the guitars out and do a little playing. Who knows? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe not. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to our newsletter at NashvilleBriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Bye.